Hello, hello, and welcome to Horror Movie Yearbook. I'm your host, Willie Gibbs. And with me is my ever-present, all-knowing co-host, who doesn't seem super confident in the praise I'm giving him, Mr. Tim Long.
I am here.
You are here.
And I am ready.
Yeah, you look ready.
I'm not any of those other things, but...
Well, I think so. And I'm sure some of our listeners feel
that will
way.
Be proven as we get further into this.
Absolutely.
Episode, sure.
By the end of this show, you're going to agree with me on that. let's kick things off with a little feedback. I want to start off there. If this is your first time listening, I know we probably have new listeners jumping on every once in a while. So we're a couple fellas from the Midwest who like to podcast. We like horror movies. We like talking about them. Mm-hmm. That's what we're doing here. We pick a year. We pick three movies from that year, and we discuss them in the context of the year they were released. So if that doesn't sound like your bag, then you know, turn away now. But I promise you, we like to have a lot of fun on this show. So if you have any questions, comments, concerns, please, please, please send them to us. Ideas are also welcome, always. You know, we're creative, but we're not like super creative. So
yeah.
Go nuts. We're mostly willing to do anything. So Facebook.com/horrormovieyearbook. We're on Twitter at HM Yearbook.
Like a and then, Craigslist ad.
I know, it's kind of creepy, right? I apologize, listening audience, for that. You can reach us on at horrormovieyearbook@gmail.com. It's an email. If you got a long-form question or comment or concern, that's the best way to do it. Want to throw it out there right out of the gate.
If you have a concern, though,
if you're concerned,
run it by somebody else before you come to us, because we are not that helpful with that kind of stuff.
You know, I'll do my best. I'll say that. I'll do my best. If I don't have an answer for you or a solution, I'll try and find somebody who does. Big thanks to John Morrell, as always, for
yes.
our music. Always wonderful to hear that lovely tune when I play back the episode and feel bad about what I said.
Yeah.
And then a big thanks to Griff Creative for all the wonderful work they've done for us. They made our logo.
They make the post the kind of mock-up magazine, horror magazine.
Oh, I love those.
Yeah, the superlative yearbook things we put together. So very cool. They do a very good job.
Yeah, they're good people.
Yes.
Did a little promo video for us a while back.
He was an intern for us for a long time. Now he seems to have graduated
one half
of that.
He's off on his own.
He is off on his own. Very successful.
He's spread his wings and flown away from us.
I want him to remember who gave him his big break.
Absolutely.
It was us.
Yeah, don't forget. Don't forget Griff. All right, let's get into some feedback. I want to throw this out there right out of the gate. A while back, when we discussed the quintessential horror film Hellraiser on our show for 1987, Anna on Twitter wanted us to make her dreams a reality and basically create a show from the perspective of Frank Cotton.
Right.
Of Hellraiser. We didn't go that far, but...
No, we couldn't get a hold of him.
No.
He got a hold of us, though.
He sure did. And he wrote up a little piece that's now on our website about some of the big movies of the year.
Mm-hmm. Mostly horror. He seems to be more of a genre fan.
He does like the genre fan. Does like the genre. He does delve into some other stuff. There's some fun stuff on there. He may or may not talk a little Vin Diesel.
Yeah.
But he's an interesting guy. And Anna wanted to, she said, it happened. Thank you, Frank, for sharing your thoughts.
Yeah,
we're glad he showed up and did that, too.
No, it was nice to hear from him. I didn't expect it following the events of the first Hellraiser.
No, I didn't. I guess they have
the second, if I recall.
I guess they have Wi-Fi in hell.
Right.
So that's pretty cool. Speaking of content on our website, Tim, you've been putting out quite a bit lately.
Yeah.
What do you got? What's the most recent piece you've written up?
I wrote about the 1968 film starring Lon Chaney and Sid Haig called Spider Baby. Big influence on Rob Zombie.
Okay.
Kind of a horror comedy. Kind of a weird, kind of kitschy 60s, almost spoof, too, of a lot of classic horror pictures. Very good movie. I liked it a lot. It's on Shudder right now. It's an excellent movie. I just wrote up a quick review. Frank contacted us and then wrote a little bit about Society a couple weeks ago from 1989.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun to read.
So, yeah, wrote a little bit about Society, and yeah, that's about it.
Yep, and then by the time you hear this, there's an article up about Friday the 13th, the game has come out. We've mentioned that once or twice on the show. We're both fans of the game, both fans of the film series. And I wrote up a little piece on some with some DLC ideas for the game, things I'd like to see. And I took a couple of Tim's suggestions as well. So, yeah, check it out. Let us know what you think.
Yeah.
If you have any DLC ideas, then tweet them at us. Tweet them at the Friday the 13th game people. They're very nice.
If you
want to
share
folks.
A gamer tag, too.
Yeah.
Like, you want to play.
Yeah.
Because we're always looking for private games to play.
Absolutely, yeah.
As long as you're not a giant racist or a homophobe.
It'd be great if you didn't.
Yeah. Because we run into those sometimes.
Do that, yeah. If you are, maybe mute yourself so I don't have to hear about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I am HemoWilliac86, HemoWillie, AC86,
mm-hmm.
on PlayStation. So.
Right.
Yeah. And then
I'm not going to give out mine because it's my girlfriend.
Yeah, I'll get you.
I don't want her getting random.
I could get you in touch with Tim.
Yeah.
So we'll use me as a point of contact. Okay, the rest of our feedback. As always, we ask the question, what's your favorite horror movie of 1995? Because that is the year we are covering this episode. Good friend David Steele says Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Next Generation.
What a choice.
But in all seriousness... He said he's worried that Tony Todd will gut him if he doesn't say Candyman 2 for all the flesh. And then he posted a wonderful photograph of him and actor Tony Todd. And I assume Tony Todd has said something very scary to Mr. David Steele because he looks like he's fearing a possible murder situation.
I wouldn't fear anything if he's wearing that hat.
He looks great.
That picture, yeah.
He looks great. And then my dad, always a great responder to our questions, says Tales from the Hood. It's his favorite.
Good for him. I totally believe that, too.
Nothing shocks me with my father.
I just want a quick breaking feedback from my father.
Actually. Sure.
He just texted me randomly out of nowhere a picture of his screen, and he says, here's a movie for your podcast. His picture of his TV screen. It's called Attack of the Lederhosen Zombies. It seems to be on Showtime Beyond right now. So he's requesting things. It's a 2016 film. We already did the class of 2016, but
true.
Maybe we can go back and do some sort of recap.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr.
Yeah, no
Long.
Problem.
Thanks, Tim's.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tim's dad. I can't talk today. I'm having a real hard time talking.
It's okay. We're only on a podcast.
It's probably because it's hot outside.
It's really hot.
But
we haven't
what?
Reviewed the weather in a couple weeks.
Yeah, it's hotter than.
It's really hot here.
Yeah.
There it is.
The pool finally opened up at my apartment
nice.
Today, so that'll be nice. You know what, though? It might be hot here in 2017 in Oakland County, Michigan, but at least we're not in 1995. There were some rough things that happened in 95.
1995 is a interesting year.
It is. Are you ready to head back?
Let's do it.
Maybe it's a little. Maybe we can like cool down a bit in 95.
Yes.
All right, let me get a time machine sound from you, sir. That was kind of cool.
I'm running out of time machine sounds.
That sounded like a backing vocal track on a Prince song. 1995, domestic terrorist bomb attack on the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City.
Oh, yep.
Killed 168 and injured more than 680 others. These are, of course, Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols. This was the Oklahoma City bombing. I do recall a bit of this being on the news quite a bit, actually, obviously,
yes.
When I was a kid. Didn't really understand it at the time, knew it wasn't good, but yeah. Michael Jordan returns to the NBA, ending his retirement. Old MJ went to try out
play baseball.
Some baseball.
Yeah. Well, his father had died in 1994, and it was kind of one of those things. It's one of those interesting stories where his dad died. His dad was a big baseball.
Sure.
He was a baseball player, and... Michael Jordan has always been a fan.
It was a tribute to his dad almost.
Kind of a tribute to his dad, and it's just kind of, it seemed like one of those things where he lost his dad and decided to like fulfill a dream, and good for him. But yeah, he was better at basketball.
Yeah, there's a great documentary about this period of Michael Jordan's career. It's called Space Jam. And if you want to get the true story behind how that all worked out, check that film out.
He saved space.
He did, and time. He saved everybody.
You know how many times I saw Space? I saw Space Jam 4 times in the theater.
I saw it a couple. I saw it at a drive-in, which is pretty cool. It was I believe
that
it was
would be cool.
Space Jam and Power Rangers the movie back to back.
I was like, I had the soundtrack too.
Yeah.
Because Space Jam, the song was Quad City DJs.
Yep.
I Believe I Can Fly was on there.
It was good stuff.
There was a really good, like Method Man. I want to say Busta Rhymes song on there too.
Okay.
Yeah, it was like a collaboration. A couple other people on there too. I don't remember who it was. But yeah,
nice.
Very good soundtrack.
Big fan. Big fan of that film. Not a horror film, but I like it a lot. There's aliens in it.
there are Monstars in it.
The Monstars.
It's a
Monstar
movie.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. All right. Unprecedented heat wave strikes the Midwestern United States.
So we're not cooling down.
No, we're not.
Me.
We're heating up.
Yeah.
Exceeds 104 degrees Fahrenheit in the afternoon for five straight days. At least 3,000 people die. 750 in Chicago, Illinois alone. Whoa.
Wow.
Not good. Yeah, I guess we can quit our complaining. The Ebola virus kills 244 Africans in Kikwit, Zaire in Central Africa. Ebola was a big talking point around this time period. Mm-hmm. And it kind of died out, you know, after a while, but it definitely, I mean, it came back in the 2000s.
Yeah.
Not that long back, right? There was a bit of an Ebola scare. So, yeah, always spooky. Your favorite celebrity, of course, Mr. O.J. Simpson.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, you've mentioned that.
Yeah,
you're
one of my faves.
You've mentioned you're a fan of
the juice. I'm a big
of
fan
the
of
juice.
Juice.
Yeah, found innocent.
Great athlete.
Yeah, wonderful
and,
athlete.
And, yeah,
and quite an actor too, comedic actor.
I'm not gonna lie, very funny in the Naked Gun movie.
Very funny.
Yeah.
Found innocent in '95.
Right.
We've talked about OJ. We're not going to go into it. Although Tim, I'm sure, would love to. Steve
no,
Fawcett.
No, we covered OJ.
Yeah, we sure have. Steve Fawcett becomes the first person to make a solo flight across the Pacific in a hot air balloon. I thought that was kind of fun.
That was cool.
Windows 95 released by Microsoft. Go figure.
Windows 95 was also the one. Windows 95 is cool because they're the ones that have that really cheesy Friends like how-to guide where like the cast of Friends is showing you how to use Windows 95. And it also, I believe Windows 95 is the one that opened with, it came with Buddy Holly's by Weezer, the music video.
That's right.
And like the extended video.
It was so
too.
Cool.
It was awesome. Yeah. I watched it so many times.
It's almost like a short film.
Mm-hmm.
Toy Story, the first wholly computer-generated film.
Okay.
Is released. That's a pretty big deal. If you look at the summer box office in the last few years, you're going to see how much of an evolution that entire type of filmmaking took. Those movies go and make crazy money now. DVD is announced in 95.
Really?
Yeah. I thought it was later than this, but DVD is announced. The optical disc storage media format. Pretty exciting stuff. DVD was a big deal. And
killed Laserdisc.
It sure did. And you know what? It led to a lot of the movies that we talked about on this show being rediscovered and reevaluated.
Yep.
And so DVD will always be my favorite format.
Yeah.
I mean, I had that nostalgic feeling for VHS because that was where I grew up watching those. And I would never go back and watch them now, certainly. I don't understand that. But DVD is, it took those movies that I discovered and it made them accessible again. And I think that's really cool.
DVD was the first introduction I had to. Sorry, I didn't interrupt.
No, you're good. You're good.
It was the first introduction. You could put so many. DVD was really cool at the start because they put a lot of special features into a lot of the best movies.
That was a big deal,
and,
too.
You can listen to audio commentaries.
Yep.
I remember that. It was like the Kevin Smith DVDs. The commentaries were better than movies.
Yeah.
Half the time. They were really funny. So
yeah.
That
and there was,
got me hooked on those for a little
bit. You could see
bit.
How some of your favorite scenes were created that you never knew.
Yep.
You could see.
They would put that on VHS sometimes, but it would be at, like the beginning or the end.
Yeah.
Like, and you would have to wait. And yeah.
That's why I always dug the Full Moon VHS tapes because they always had some sort of special stuff at the end of the tape.
Right.
Yeah, no, DVD was awesome. The Grateful Dead breakup, they announced their breakup in 95.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm not a Dead fan.
I'm not either, but...
hey, if you are.
But, yeah, it's very sad. eBay starts the online auction and shopping website where people buy and sell goods and services worldwide.
Still use it today?
Still kicking. Gotta like that eBay. You can find stuff on there that you never thought you could buy. Top singles, 95. This is a list. You ready for it?
Yes.
Number 10, This Is How We Do It, Montel Jordan.
Hell yeah.
This is how we do it.
Had that album. I'm betting I had most of these albums.
I bet you did.
Because I was getting into, I had a Columbia House subscription around this time.
Oh, man, this is good stuff. Number 9, Don't Take It Personal, Just One of Them Days, Monica.
I did not have that one, but I know that song. It's a good song.
Yep. Number 8, Take a Bow, Madonna.
I did not have the Madonna.
No.
Maybe I did not have most of these, but I did have Montel Jordan.
You know these songs, though.
Yes.
Number 7, Fantasy, Mariah Carey. Number
good
6.
Song.
Yeah, it is. Number 6, Another Night, Real McCoy.
My brother had that album, I believe.
Nice.
Yeah.
Number 5, On Bended Knee, Boys to Men.
Definitely had that album. That's their second big album there.
There it is.
Oh, Yeah, that's a good album.
Don't get you started on Boyz II Men. Number four, Kiss from a Rose, Seal.
Hell yeah.
I had that, tape.
Better cheesy movie soundtrack superhero song, that or Hero from Spider-Man?
Kiss from a Rose.
I think so, too.
It's the better song.
They're kind of similar, though, in structure.
Yeah, the better superhero song is Hero, clearly.
Okay.
But the better song is Kiss from a Rose.
Okay.
Number three, Creep, TLC.
Had that.
Number two, Waterfalls, TLC.
TLC was huge this year.
Big deal.
Those two songs were all over the place.
Big deal. Care to guess number one? I don't know if you want to try or not.
I'm guessing it's a Mariah Carey song. Is it One Sweet Day with Boyz II Men?
It is not.
Oh, man.
It's Gangsta's Paradise, Coolio.
Yes, I had that album.
Which is wonderful.
Yeah. A lot of those were soundtrack songs.
Right? Yeah, a lot of them were soundtrack songs. That was Dangerous Minds.
Yeah.
That movie was a big deal, too.
Yes.
When it came out. All right, top movies, 95. Number 10, Jumanji.
Okay.
Number 9, Waterworld. Despite
really?
Being considered like one of the big box office bombs of all time, that tells you how much money they spent on it.
It still made money.
Still
yeah.
made money, yep. Number 8, Casper. Where I first gained my major crush on Christina Ricci. Oh, it was a big deal.
I thought you were going to say Casper.
Yeah, of course. Devin Sawa.
Devin Sawa. I meant the ghost.
I hated Devin Sawa.
Yeah.
Do you know why?
Why? Because he kissed Christina Ricci.
In two movies.
Spoilers.
Not one, but two.
What was the other one?
It was a... God, we're gonna
was
be
it
the,
Now and Then?
We are going to be the first horror movie podcast to talk about Now and Then. And instantly, watch our Twitter followers just cut in half. I was a fan of this film because I had a crush on Christina Ricci.
Uh-huh.
I saw her originally in The Addams Family, and I was into it. But I rented any Christina Ricci movie because I had the biggest crush on her.
Right.
And so I rented Now and Then. Delightful little film.
Right.
And Devon Sawa kisses Christina Ricci in both those films.
Okay.
And so I still don't like him.
Now and Then was the one where let's stay on this Now and Then. That was the one where they were like older and they told stories of that.
Yeah. I remember being really confused that Christina Ricci grew up to be Rosie O'Donnell.
That is weird.
It's not a choice.
Because they don't even have similar personality traits.
No.
One's very loud. Christina Ricci can be very dry at a lot of times. I haven't seen Now and Then, maybe ever.
It's a sweet movie.
I know of it. Yeah.
All right, we got to get off this. let's get dark. Number 7 was 7. You can't make this up.
Awesome.
Number Perfect. 7 was 7. Perfect. Number 6, the aforementioned superhero film, Batman Forever.
Okay.
Number 5, Pocahontas, Disney.
That's one of my... I'm going to put this out there. That is one of the weirder Disney movies to make. What a story.
I'm gonna throw this out there. I've never seen Pocahontas.
I don't like it. I think it's... Yeah. We'll move on from that.
All right. Number 4, GoldenEye.
Oh, my boy Pierce.
Mm-hmm.
As Crushing Bond, his first outing.
Gotta like that. Number 3, Apollo 13.
Great movie.
Number 2, my favorite on this list, personally, Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Hell yeah. So Die Hard with a Vengeance.
It's sweet.
Is, until the third act is, I think it's as good as Die Hard.
No, it is. The third act is what breaks it.
It's what breaks it. Yep. And it's not horrible. It's just not as good.
It's so generic action movie by the end of it. That's the bummer.
Yep.
Yeah. And number 1 was the fully CG animated film Toy Story.
So Die Hard with a Vengeance was number 2?
Yeah.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy.
Hey, man. You know, Sam Jackson was starting to take off a bit there. Like, he hadn't quite hit Pulp Fiction yet.
What's his name? Is it Zeus?
Zeus.
Oh, he's awesome.
He's so cool. Is he your favorite John McClane sidekick?
So I guess who would be the other ones? Reginald Bell Johnson in the first one.
Yeah.
Who's
which
in the second?
The second is... I don't know if he has... Reginald Bell Johnson's back in the second one, isn't he?
Is he?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. I know Dennis Franz is around, but he's more of a foil.
Yeah, he's like a foil.
I recall.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to say he has someone else there. Okay, so there, and then Justin Long and Kevin Smith in the fourth one. And so I think he's better than that. And then I did not see the fifth one. So
yep.
I will say, you know what? I'll say...
Can't forget Argyle either.
Oh, damn it.
I threw you for a loop there with Argyle.
It's Argyle then.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
He's
it's
so cool.
Argyle stays in the garage the whole
He's
movie.
Awesome. But then when he needs to show up and take care of business, he does.
Yeah.
I love it. All right, enough playing around.
Yep.
Let's get into some movies.
Some horror movies.
Yeah, yeah, right? This is what the people came for. Tales from the Crypt, Demon Knight.
Mm-hmm.
The synopsis says, a man on the run is hunted by a demon known as the Collector. Not that Collector.
Not the Collector from 2000s.
No. So, Tales from the Crypt, it started off as an EC comic, and was very... I don't think any comic book was thrown away by parents more than probably Tales from the Crypt was.
Mm-hmm.
It was like trash. Like the kids would hide it. You know? Like you'd hide it inside another comic book to keep it secret. But it had all sorts of fun little like morality tales in the form of creepy little one shot horror stories. And at some point, the execs at HBO were pitched the idea to turn it into a television show. So each episode would be a different story. Some of them were pulled directly from the comics. Some were originally created for the show. And it was pretty successful. Ran for, what, 5 seasons?
I think it was 7.
Was it 7?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I did my research, see? And it was quite successful.
Seven, but I'm pretty sure.
Had a lot of really famous guest stars. If you're looking for, like, your favorite comedian, like an early performance, they probably popped up on Tales from the Crypt. In the same way that your favorite early dramatic actors' performances were probably in a Law and Order show. So, yeah. But anyway, it was popular enough to make the execs at HBO decide, let's make a feature-length film, or two, or three. And they had a few scripts, and one of which was Demon Knight, and that was the one they chose to adapt first. And it was the best of the bunch, and I think both of our opinions in terms of Tales from the Crypt movies.
Yes.
Tim. I want you to kick things off. I know you're a really big fan of this movie, as am I.
Mm-hmm.
But what's your take on Demon Knight?
It is and it holds up. It's still a blast.
Ton of fun.
It's more of a. Here's what's weird is I don't think it's a perfect Tales from the Crypt movie because the Tales from the Crypt comics and even the show, for the most part, were kind of morality tales.
Mm-hmm.
But there were episodes of those shows that were similar to this, I would say.
Sure.
So it could be a few different things, but for the most part, I think they were people doing bad stuff and then getting their comeuppance.
Mm-hmm.
So in actuality, I think the best Tales from the Crypt movie is Drag Me to Hell. But
yeah,
this is, as far as this goes, if you just judge this straight up as a movie, it is perfectly structured. It's perfectly paced. I love the way it drops you right into the world. Like, you are, from the opening scene, you're in a chase between Bill Sadler and Billy Zane.
And you don't know who they are.
Nope.
You don't know what the deal is. You know that they don't like each other. But you can't tell who's the villain, who's the hero. Actually, they kind of tease, not for long, that Zane's the hero mm-hmm. and Sadler's the villain.
Right.
Which is fun.
And actually, when you look at him... That's kind of what you think, too, because Zane looks like a leading man,
yep.
And Bill Sadler doesn't necessarily.
Yeah, and he's got the leather jacket on. He's very dark, you know. Yep. Zane's got, like, the cowboy. He looks like the rugged cowboy hero.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Riding into town to take out this guy. And, yeah, it's fun that they play with that.
So it's a perfect introduction, and then it goes right into introducing this. It's got a great cast, and it introduces this cast of characters, and they all have their different little quirks and weird things, and they're all at this place. And, I mean, you got Bill Sadler, you got Thomas Hayden Church, you have...
CCH Pounder.
Star of Orphan, CCH Pounder. You have yep. Jada Pinkett. I believe before she was Jada Pinkett Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Who am I forgetting here? Dick Miller.
Dick Miller.
Is it? And he's awesome.
Dick Miller turns into a demon in this movie. like a
does.
Horny demon. And he's awesome.
He does, yes. So it drops you into this world, and then it does this thing where it explains the plot as it goes, and I think that's really... that's kind of what you're looking for. And it's an action horror comedy, basically. And it builds this really, really fun and intriguing world with, like, this backstory about the Demon Knights. And
yeah.
it's just really neat, but it's never overbearing with it.
Like, no, you get flashes of it.
Yeah, they present it in a really neat way. And they do it throughout the plot. Honestly, I think it's, for what it is as a movie, it's kind of perfect. I guess maybe towards the end, they play a little bit fast and loose with some of the rules, if I recall correctly. But even that, I mean, you forgive that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because it moves quick enough. And then, yeah, it turns, like, the second act turns into a, like, a siege movie, and it's really good in that. And then the end is kind of the showdown. It's weird. I actually think Bordello of Blood feels a little bit more like a classic Tales from the Crypt episode. It's not as good, though. And Ritual just... The Ritual's the third one. I don't know. Have you seen that one? The third Tales
I have
from the
not.
Crypt? Don't. It's... They just threw Tales from the Crypt on it. I think it, and I think it's probably because they had maybe a third movie built under some sort of contract.
Well,
contractual obligation.
Here's something real quick, since you're on that subject. At the end of the credits, the Crypt Keeper does announce another movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Dead Easy. That was going to be the second movie in the movie series, in the trilogy. And that was a zombie story set in New Orleans. But it got abandoned. And then there was another film in that trilogy called Body Count, also abandoned. And
yeah.
So Bordello of Blood and Ritual were not originally the
okay.
scripts that they had looked at and said these are going to be the movies.
And I know they had some discussions around that time with Tarantino and Rodriguez for From Dusk Till Dawn, which is actually pretty similar to Demon Knight.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
In a lot of ways.
But Tarantino was not selling that to
right.
them because I they talked to the writers a little bit on the Scream Factory Blu-ray. They put together a documentary. It's very good, as all Scream Factory documentaries tend to be. But they talked to him a little bit, and the writers of they kind of made some changes in the script to make it more like a Tales from the Crypt movie. And I can see Tarantino going, "No, you're not doing that."
Yeah, for sure.
Yep. So,
yeah.
And there's probably some money aspects to that too. But
for sure.
Yep.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Love this movie. I remember actually being kind of freaked out by it as a kid when I saw it on HBO, kind of spooked by it, and Billy Zane really freaked me out, but he's so much fun. He's, you know, the thing is, I think that cast that you mentioned, everybody plays their parts to perfection. Even those characters who are don't have a lot to do, like the cops that show up, don't have a ton to do, and you get a little less of an idea who they are, but... They're fun to be around still, and you kind of figure out who they are just by the way they interact with the other people, you know. But Billy Zane is probably the star of the show here.
Yeah,
and that's saying a lot because Bill Sadler's a rock star. Like, I love Bill Sadler, and he's really good in this. And Jada Pinkett's really good in this too.
She is.
Her character Jeri Lynn is really a cool heroine. And you know, I think especially moving on into Tales of the Hood eventually on this episode, we're going to talk a lot about race and a lot about African-Americans and kind of their role in horror. And oftentimes I feel like when you talk about certainly black characters in horror movies, oftentimes they're like that classic first person to die. Like it's a trope now. Like, oh, the black guy dies first, you know, and
they've made about a billion jokes about it in various movies too.
Yeah. It's so like the joke is kind of a joke now. And
the joke is played out now.
It's played out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, the studio wanted Cameron Diaz.
Really?
Yeah. In this role. And Ernest Dickerson said, well, no, why don't we do something more interesting? Why don't we have Jada Pinkett? You know? And at the time she wasn't, like a major name. You know what I mean? Like, she, once again, she didn't have the Smith at the end of her name yet. But even before that, when she was still Jada Pinkett, she did wind up getting a bit of a following. People, she was a recognizable face, you know, as a young actress. She didn't even hit that point yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's awesome for Ernest Dickerson to jump in there and say, hey, why would we do that? Why don't we do something more interesting with this? Like, why are we, not that Cameron Diaz isn't a fine actress in her own right, but.
No, but there's Yeah, she hadn't been in much by this point. I'm just looking at her filmography before Demon Knight. Menace Society she was in, Jason's Lyric she was in. I remember those two.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Lowdown Dirty Shame. I think that was the Keenan Ivory movie, I want to say.
Yeah.
But yeah, she had this Nutty Professor back to back, but there's a toughness to Jada Pinkett.
There
that
is.
It does not come, that you wouldn't buy it with Cameron Diaz.
You wouldn't. And no. And the what's interesting about Jada Pinkett and her believable toughness is that she's not a big woman.
No.
She's very thin, and she's smaller, but she, God, every time you see her on screen, you look at her and you go, she's an ass kicker. Like,
it's her facial expressions, I think, too.
Totally.
Did you know she was in a metal band?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That makes me like her even more. But, you know, Ernest Dickerson being an African-American director, you know what I mean? Like, you got to think he's thinking to himself, this is a chance for me to create a new heroine. And he really does. I would watch a movie right now following Jada Pinkett's character, like now, like checking in with her and seeing what she's doing now as a Demon Knight.
Yes.
As long as you had Ernest Dickerson on board, because the guy is crazy talented. And
I'm looking at Jada. The last movie, I saw her Magic Mike Double XL. She's really good in that.
A lot of fun.
Yeah. I think we were robbed of Ernest Dickerson and Jada Pinkett performances throughout the years, because her career is pretty spotty.
Yeah.
When it comes to this, but I'm looking at the movie she's in, and she's memorable in all of them.
She's always really good.
Yeah, she's really good in Scream 2 for the short time she's in it.
Yep.
Spoilers. don't worry, she just disappears if you haven't seen it. But, yeah, I don't know. I think whether it be just personal things or whatever it was, but yeah, she hasn't been in maybe as much as she should have. And yes. She's really good in this. I think
she is really good in this.
Fantastic lead.
She's one of the more interesting female heroines I've seen in any horror movie, so it's awesome. Yeah, and then Ernest Dickerson's been doing a lot of Walking Dead, so good for him. I mean, he's you know.
Ernest Dickerson's done a lot of TV.
A lot of TV, and good TV, so
yes.
That's awesome. But yeah, big fan of this movie. If you haven't seen it, and I care to guess there's some people that are listening to this that have not seen this movie. I still don't think it's quite found as much of a following as it deserves, even now.
I think there are a couple movies we're going to talk about tonight, and I'm happy Scream Factory put out a Blu-ray of both of them.
Yeah, excellent Blu-rays.
That deserve a little bit of reevaluation,
yep.
If you will.
So, okay, well, check it out. It's totally worth it.
Real
it's
quick.
Very cool.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Before we move on. I wanted to make a book recommendation, actually.
Sure.
Because I read this a few years back. And it covers a lot. It's called The 10-Cent Plague, The Great Comic Book Scare and How It Changed America by David Hajdu, I believe.
Okay.
It covers a lot of ground. It mostly focuses on like the comic books of the 50s and the 40s and 50s. But it spends a lot of time with EC Comics and especially the horror comics of that time. So,
did you ever read those? Were you big on those at all?
I've only read a few, and I mostly am aware of them through this book,
actually. Cool.
But stuff like Tales from the Crypt and Vault of Horror. And EC Comics would actually go on to publish Mad Magazine as well, which is the pinnacle of American humor.
Of course.
That much is obvious.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to recommend that book for people looking for a little bit more, because I am a person, I've always wanted to go back and read those old EC comics, and I've only read a couple through various ways, but this is a good place to get a background on that.
Cool.
Too. So yeah, the 10-Cent Plague.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I'll have to look into that. Do you have it, or?
You know what? I believe I do. I believe it's at my parents' house still.
Okay.
You know what? Actually, before you leave, let me check. It might be upstairs.
Okay. Cool.
In a box.
Yeah, I'd like to check that out. All right. You know what? We love Billy Zane.
Yeah.
Not just in this movie, in a lot of movies,
mm-hmm.
but he's really good in this. And we'd like to, I'd like to quiz you, Tim, on a little Billy Zane.
Perfect.
So literally all I'm doing, and you guys can play along at home, is I'm Googling Billy Zane quiz, and I'm going to click on the first few.
Good.
And you're going to take some Billy Zane quizzes right now.
I could not be more ready.
You're ready?
Yes.
Billy Zane played John Wheeler in this popular TV series. Was it 21 Jump Street, Charmed, Twin Peaks, or Samantha Who? John
Wheeler. I believe he was in Samantha Who.
Samantha Who. It was Twin Peaks.
Is he in season 2 of Twin Peaks?
I'm assuming it was season 2.
That's interesting. I'm watching season 1 of Twin Peaks right now.
Well, get ready for some Zane.
I have not seen Billy Zane. I've stayed away from season 2 because I've heard it's horrible. But now that I hear Billy Zane is in it.
Now you're on board.
Yep.
When is Billy Zane's birthday? April 11th, 1963. May 22nd, 1968. February 24th, 1966. Or June 1st, 1970.
February.
February 24th, 1966. That's correct.
Oh, my God. Okay, good. I'm 1-2.
Proud of you. Zane is proud of you, too, wherever he's at right now. In which famous movie did Billy Zane play a villain directed by James Cameron?
Oh, I don't need a...
Nope, I know.
But let me hear the multiple choice on this
The
one.
Setup, The Mad, Blood of Redemption, or Titanic?
What are those? It's Titanic.
It is indeed Titanic.
Okay, 2-3.
Yeah, you're doing great.
I'm kind of bummed the Twin Peaks one is the one I missed, but...
That's okay. Which British actress played the leading role in Titanic with Billy Zane? Was it Rachel Weisz, Kate Winslet, Rosamund Pike, or Catherine Zeta-Jones?
It's Kate Winslet.
Absolutely. Wonderful work. Wonderful work. This is the fun and excitement you can get when you just Google Billy Zane. Who did Billy play in Australian thriller film Dead Calm? Was it Captain John Ingram, Huey Warner, Russell Bellows, or Specialist Doctor?
Excuse me, Specialist Doctor?
Yes.
What was the... I'll say Russell Bellows.
Russell Bellows. It was Huey Warner.
What was Dead Calm?
It's the one with him and Sam Neill and Nicole Kidman on a boat.
Yep, yep.
It's actually kind of fun. Fun's not the right word for it. Billy Zane filmed. Wow. Okay, I'm going to read this question exactly as it's written. Billy Zane filmed in this American comic science fiction film directed by Robert Zemeckis when he was 19 years. Star Trek, Back to the Future, E.T., or Star Wars?
Well, it had to be Back to the Future.
That's the only Zemeckis movie on that list.
Yeah.
Well, you would be correct, sir.
Okay.
Which video game Billy voiced?
What happened?
Who's writing this quiz?
Call of Duty, Kingdom Hearts, Half-Life, or Doom?
Which video game featured his voice?
I would assume that's what they mean by this.
Name them off again.
Call of Duty, Kingdom Hearts, Half-Life, or Doom?
I will say Half-Life.
We're going to go with Half-Life? All right. Kingdom Hearts.
God, that's so perfect.
All right, final question.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to read the question once again, how it was written. In which Marilyn Manson music video Billy appeared? The Dope Show, Get Your Gun, Reverend, or Sweet Dreams Are Made of This?
I don't think he's in Sweet Dreams because that one... Is he in Dope Show? He might be in Dope Show.
We're going to go with Dope Show?
Yeah.
All right. That would be correct.
Yep.
Wonderful.
You remember the Dope Show video? That's the one where Manson wore that like bodysuit in it. And then
he had stilts and stuff, right?
Yeah, and the pink... No, I think that was a different... one had the cops in the pink uniforms that I believe like started dancing and making out with each other at some point.
Yeah, I kind of remember that.
Yeah.
All right, well, you scored a 63 out of 100.
I'm a little let down by that.
On how well you know Billy Zane. We're going to take one more Billy Zane quiz.
Okay, good.
We're going to let you dream yourself. You know, this one's not going to have specific answers to it.
Okay.
I mean, it is, but you're not going to get graded at the end.
Okay.
This is a quiz to make you feel good. This one is going to determine who your soulmate is, Leonardo DiCaprio or Billy Zane.
Oh, it's like a personality type question.
Yes.
Okay, good, good.
Someone appears to you in a dream. Do you see them or feel them?
I feel them.
How far are you from the person you love most, near or far?
I'm going to say far. Wait.
You want to change that?
Yeah, I don't know why I answered it that way.
Okay, we're going near.
That could get me in trouble with some people that listen to this.
Love was when I loved you, one true time I hold to, or love can touch us one time and last for a lifetime.
Love can touch us one time and last for a lifetime.
Okay. How many times will you open the door? Once or once more after that first time?
I'm going to have to like open the door once more after that first time.
Okay. Where are you currently located? In my heart or some other place?
In my heart.
Okay. There's a really good picture of Billy Zane smoking a cigarette in that, too. Where are you most safe? In my heart, because my heart will go on, or the lifeboat? Where are you most safe?
Where am I most safe? In my heart, because my heart will go on, or the lifeboat?
Yeah.
I would assume the lifeboat.
Yeah. I just asked Leonardo DiCaprio. Will you ever let go? Yes or no?
No.
Are you ready for your answer of who your soulmate is?
Okay.
You got Billy Zane.
Finally. Thank God. Finally.
And here's the description below. I'm going to use some curse words here. Fuck Leo DiCaprio. You're on the Zane train. It's insane how much you and Billy Zane are in sync. If you had to choose between Zayn Malik and Billy Zane, you're team Billy Zane all the way. There's only one room in your heart for one Zane, and Billy is here to stay. The Zane train has arrived, ladies.
Good. I was answering that hoping to get Billy Zane, by the way.
Well, you know, you and Billy Zane would make a steamy couple.
Just with a lot of similarities there. We both like hats.
Yeah. You both got great smiles. But you know what else is really steamy, Tim?
What's that? This room, it's fucking 400 degrees in here.
It is. I was going to say species.
Oh, we're doing species next. All right.
That was a segue. The synopsis for Species is a group of scientists try to track down and trap a killer alien seductress before she successfully mates with a human. That's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm.
And mate, she does. Species is the first time on this podcast we've really delved into sci-fi horror. We've dabbled, I think, before, but this is a straight up sci-fi horror movie.
Yeah, I don't think we did it. None of the '90s one we did.
No, we've done a lot of slashers. We've done a lot of supernatural horror. This might be our first sci-fi horror.
A couple giallos, if I recall.
Yep. Now, sci-fi horror is that weird kind of sub-genre mix of genres where it could go either way, but Species definitely fits the sci-fi with the horror. Tinge. She does a lot of killing in this movie, and a lot of brutal killing, which is one of the highlights of the film.
Yes.
I'll start off. Species is sleazy.
Yeah.
It's really sleazy. It's like silk stockings sleazy. I mean, you've got a plot that is essentially about hot alien, really, really, really wants to have sex. Like, badly.
Yeah.
But if she has sex, it could mean the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So these guys and gals got to stop her. Okay? So this is essentially the same plot as plenty of sci-fi action movies, only except for, like, a biological weapon that could go off and they have to team together to stop it before it goes off. Or instead of some sort of terrorist threat that has to be neutralized before something happens. Or maybe even, like an alien attack, like an Independence Day, right?
Mm-hmm.
This one is, we got to stop her from doing it.
Yeah. They do a bad job.
They do, because she has a lot of opportunities.
I was going to say, Silk Talk is a good, this feels like a Skinamax version of an X-Files episode,
mm-hmm.
as well.
Sure.
If you're not familiar with Skinamax, it was what Cinemax turned into after about 11:30 at night. Which is essentially softcore pornography.
Yep.
Like, it wouldn't be like stuff like you would. It wouldn't be like the stuff you see online that I've heard about. It
right.
would be. It would be kind of like just a mashup of like certain sex scenes.
Yeah. It was a lot of heavy petting.
Exactly.
Basically.
Yes.
And
this is honestly the plot of this. If you took that plot and put it in a Skinamax movie, if you will. It would be like the same plot. I'm sure they exist that where they have the exact same plot.
Totally. No, I mean, this is we talked about this a little bit after watching it. This is the perfect blend of a Sci-Fi Channel original and a Cinemax movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's or a Cinemax show, whatever. That is exactly what it is. I didn't come out of this movie thinking to myself, "Wow, this is underrated. This deserves a rediscovery." I will say Scream Factory has also put on a Blu-ray on this one.
Okay. I did not pick that one up.
So it's got its fans, I'm sure, and that's cool. And I mean, don't get me wrong, there are some cool creature designs, courtesy of H.R. Giger.
Yeah.
The Syl design when she's fully transformed. I should say the Syl design when she's fully transformed but not a CG creation is really cool. There are bits where she has nightmares about, or dreams, or I guess wet dreams maybe, about her and an alien male like swing around like and making love to each other. Like the alien male is actually thrusting at one point. So not even the dreams in this movie are void of thrusting. But those suits that were created for Syl and the male alien creature are fantastic.
Yes. I would agree with that.
And the visual of them kind of like floating in this tank is really cool.
I would agree this movie has its charms.
It does.
The kill scenes are really good.
Kills are also great.
The gore is good.
There's a cool bit where a woman gets her spinal cord like ripped out of her back. Mm-hmm. It's kind of neat. And there's some cool stuff. There's a tongue through the back of a dude's head.
Tongue through the head is the one.
Through
the
Robbie.
Memorable. Yeah.
One of the most 90s characters ever. he thinks that using the clapper will instantly get him in Natasha Henstridge's pants.
Robbie the gentleman she meets at that nightclub?
Yes.
She goes to? That nightclub, I lost it during that nightclub.
It's really funny.
Because it's like the most 90s nightclub ever. It's got just like pumping Euro trance music in the background. There's this guy dancing like on her. That's really funny too.
It's so
go watch that because he's very direct. And then there is there's some bongos if I recall.
Oh god,
it's so good.
So good.
Everybody's wearing blazers and t-shirts.
It's so good.
And like blazers with shoulder pads and t-shirts in this club. Yeah.
There's a lot of shoulder pads. I just want to let our listening audience know that I implore you to do the same. Google species right now, and you guys look and see what channels it's airing on next. And I guarantee you that every listing is Cinemax, because it is. I see 5 listings for Action Max, which is the Cinemax action movie spinoff.
I watch a lot of Action Max.
Why not, right?
Yeah.
I want to throw out a few factoids about Species here. A lot
Please
of facts
do.
About this show or this movie online. These are all taken from IMDb, so if they aren't real, I really apologize. But it is what it is. During the production, MGM opted not to shoot the nightmare train sequence to keep costs down. H.R. Giger was not willing to accept that, however, so he spent $100,000 of his own money to finance the sequence. Wow.
Let's do it for the art.
That's a cool bit, though, actually, when the train is coming at her.
It is good.
Yeah. Michael Madsen and Marge Helgenberger were allowed to improvise their sex scene. Okay.
It kind of shows, if I remember.
Yeah, it's pretty awkward. I have issues with both these characters. Michael Madsen's character, as far as I can tell, doesn't have a character. He just kind of wants to, he's just kind of gruff. But he can get the ladies.
Yeah,
he's like he's like a '90s, like he's like the quintessential '90s guy. Like,
can I talk a little bit about?
Go ahead.
Okay, before
he has a pet cat.
We'll get back to the trivia in a second, but I had fun with this movie. This is like a 2.5-star movie. If there was ever a 2.5-star movie, this is it because it has its charms. I have fun with it. It moves pretty quick. It's a little long in the tooth, but it moves pretty quick. But it sets up in the first half, it kind of sets up to be pretty awesome. I think the first like 40 minutes of this are pretty cool because it's got this neat thing where, she is kind of like the time bomb this group of professionals has to disarm.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's kind of a neat gimmick, but so they bring in all these characters and they all have their own special abilities. And so like Forest Whitaker is an empath. But like as they go out throughout the movie, you never really get to see them do that much. If I recall, you never get to see them showcase. Like I laughed one time. Forrest Whitaker goes, and I wrote the quote down. Thank God. But he's a lunatic in this movie, by the way.
Yeah.
As Forrest can tend to be at times. But he's an empath, so he has like empathy powers, I guess.
Yeah, he can feel emotion, like lingered emotion, but that's not what he's doing in this movie.
No, because Ben Kingsley is standing there one time, and he goes to him, he goes, "It makes you feel bad that you have to kill her." And I just, well, thanks, Forrest.
Yeah. Idiot.
But then the second half of this movie is where, like, and it's kind of funny, but the characters just drop any sort of, and they stop basically, it seems like, going after Natasha Henderson's character, and they just want to have sex.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody wants to get laid.
Yeah,
yeah. This movie, which...
It's crazy.
It's crazy, but it doesn't make for maybe the most dramatically interesting.
No, like Marge Helgenberger, for instance, the only, like human female character really in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
She's supposed to be some sort of biological... Some sort of scientist, okay? Generic scientist, let's just say. And basically all she does over the course of the film, the hour and 48 minutes of film, is she replaces a camera in the most absurdly over-dramatized scene ever. She replaces a camera, and then she tries really hard to have sex with Michael Madsen and eventually succeeds.
Right.
That's about it.
Leading back. Here's the thing, though. She's a crappy character. Anyway, she's pretty one note, one dimensional. And honestly, this movie would probably be more interesting if her character wasn't in it and it was just male characters trying to stop this female's. Like, you could almost read into it. Like, here's this female. Like, they're trying to stop her burgeoning sexuality, like taking control of her sexuality. But she's such a shit character that it completely undercuts any of the theme that it might have.
Yeah. Yeah, and then you get to Ben Kingsley's character,
oh,
who
God, yeah.
randomly and like unceremoniously gets killed towards the end of the movie, and no one like really reacts to it. Like, he's just gone. You're like, oh, okay.
And he's kind of like the leader. He's kind of like the Nick Fury, the Professor X of the group.
He totally is. Yeah. He's the guy who created the monster. I don't know. Whatever. All right, back to some facts here.
Okay.
For Species. There is some craziness surrounding Species, and here, I'm going to let you know what it is. The premise of the film is believed by some to be true.
Okay.
That an ancient reptilian slash alien race has interbred with humans in order to rule humanity. This is that there are believers of this. I don't recall what the belief is, like what the name for it is, but this is a thing. It's like V.
Okay.
The show V, yeah.
Okay.
In August 1995, a woman named Madeline Tolentino from Puerto Rico allegedly spotted the chupacabra, which had killed several animals in the last few months. She later admitted she actually just described Syl, the creature from this film. And she believed the events depicted were actually happening in her town. That's pretty cool. Here's my favorite.
You ever seen the chupacabra, really?
Have I ever seen one live and in person? No, I have not. I'd like to, though.
It's a bummer, right?
The goat sucker. Here's my favorite crazy person story. And go figure, it's H.R. Giger. The original effects-only version of the Syl nightmare sequence, where she dreams herself in her alien form, and she's mating with the male alien, was 20 minutes long, and was much more detailed and more graphic. Giger, who designed some of the effects for the film, loved the original uncut version of the nightmare mating scene, and hated how it was only a few seconds long, and what he felt was poorly edited in the final movie version. Giger also came up with the idea of killing Syl by blowing her head off, because he thought her original death in the script, where she gets burned alive, was too weak. Giger had some other suggestions for the ending, one of which included a bigger, more action-packed ending that would take place in a drive-in theater showing Ridley Scott's original Alien from 1979.
What a callback.
This ending had the military fighting against Syl with helicopters, and Laura eventually killing Syl by blowing her head off with a rocket launcher. After she gets killed, Syl's baby would crawl out of her, but would also end up dying either by explosion or by being beaten to death by the soldiers.
Jeez.
Holy shit.
It's yeah.
Giger's something else.
Yeah, I don't want to read too much into else. That. Sounds like he might have some issues. So.
Yeah. I like
that. A 20-minute long sequence. Can you imagine if this movie was 20 minutes longer and 20 minutes of it straight, apparently, were that scene?
Yes. It was basically, it was a softcore porn scene with two people in full latex prosthetics just humping away underwater.
You know who'd like that? Frank Cotton.
He would love it. Frank Cotton would love to get down with Syl. We should hook those two up. We should Photoshop some like honeymoon photos of Frank and Syl together.
Oh God.
Like on the beach?
Yeah.
Like sandals. Okay.
Chillaxing.
Just chillaxing. With my girl. With my boo. Yeah, so is Species a good movie? No. Does it have its fun moments, and is it worth maybe checking out after you've had a couple drinks? Sure, why not?
I'm looking at Roger Donaldson, the director's filmography, too, and you could say these exact same things about a lot of his movies. Cocktail.
Cocktail. That's fun.
It's fun. I'm not sure I'd call it good. The Bank Job with Jason Statham.
Okay.
Fun. 13 Days is pretty good. That's the JFK.
Yep. Yeah.
Dante's Peak.
I love
Dante's
Peak.
Peak is pretty good. No Way Out with Kevin Costner. He's got a fun filmography.
He does, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a fan.
Oh, The Getaway. I mean, did you ever see The Getaway?
I think
that's with. Yeah. The Getaway is one. That's a perfect one where you're like, okay, that might not be good. That's another 2.5-star.
It's also pretty steamy.
Yep.
Yep. Well, good stuff. Tim, anything else you want to mention about Species before we jump out of it?
No, this came at a, I guess then. Not no, as I said. But this came out, the 90s were a pretty big time for science fiction horror at around this time. You had stuff like Sphere, Congo, even Deep Rising.
I love Congo.
Yeah.
I'm an apologist.
Mimic, Phantoms, The Relic, Carnosaur. You've got there's some fun stuff in there. So I just think I wanted to make mention of that. It comes around this time. The 90s were a time of where technology and science made some leaps. I mean, there was a whole cloning thing with, remember Dolly the sheep and stuff?
Dolly,
they cloned a sheep. And so there were some science gone wrong stuff, especially around the mid-90s, mid to late.
I think a lot of it was a response to the popularity of Michael Crichton around this time.
Oh, Jurassic Park kind of fits in that too, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think
Congo was a great
novel. Michael Crichton.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think people were going, "Wow, if we can take that and apply it to horror movies, you know, we could make some money. And most of them made money.
Yeah.
So I do own the book Relic. I haven't read it yet. I've heard it's pretty good.
Okay. So the movie's kind of fun, if I remember.
Yeah, I had a good time with it.
Yeah.
So real quick, before we jump into our last movie, I want to talk briefly about we're dedicating two of our bonus segments, essentially, to inspired by Billy Zane.
Yes.
I'd like to talk about some of your favorite scenery-chewing performances.
In horror movies?
In horror movies, yeah. And, you know, just those... Oftentimes, horror movies are kind of frowned upon by a lot of serious actors. I'm using air quotes. And I think that that's changed to a certain extent, but I think there's still a lot of that. And I love to see when an actor who usually doesn't do a horror movie, like, will do a horror movie and just destroy it, just crush it. Like, they know what they're doing, and they're having a great time with it.
Mm-hmm.
Or, that being said, there are plenty of genre, like, vets that have had wonderful scenery-chewing performances.
Right.
So, I don't know. I just wanted to kind of go through a couple with you. You know, just talk about a few.
I'm good with that.
Is there anything that you thought of when I posed this question?
Yeah, or? First one that popped into my head for whatever reason, and maybe it's because I always have Rob Zombie on the brain, but Malcolm McDowell in Halloween 2, because, oh my God.
Yeah. There's not much scenery left.
No. Is the movie better or worse for it? I don't know. That's up to you.
Yeah.
But he's certainly something to watch.
He is.
In that movie.
He is. He's a maniac in that one, which is funny because he's pretty subdued in the first one.
Yeah, he is. And that's what's so weird about it. It's almost like a completely different character. Yeah.
It's really weird.
It's not almost. It totally is.
It is.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and throw out one of my faves, Dennis Hopper in Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 2.
I have another TCM. So.
He's insane in that movie.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 2 is a movie that I recall really liking, but I always stay away from rewatching because there is so much screaming in it.
It's
some of it is the lead actress, and if I recall, some of it is Dennis Hopper.
Oh, yeah. And then he busts out not one, but two chainsaws at one point. And then has a chainsaw fight with Leatherface.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's nuts.
It's a very loud movie.
Yeah. Yeah. There's dynamite in that scene, too, if I remember right. It's crazy. But Dennis Hopper really goes there in that movie. Yeah.
One more I wanted to mention from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre series. Can you guess this one?
Matthew McConaughey.
Oh, my goodness.
Tell me about Matthew.
The Next Generation. I watched this movie. It was probably about 2 years ago now. Wow, I thought it was more recent than that. McConaughey has given some over-the-top performances in the past. But, yeah, he's something else in this one. It makes the movie watchable to me.
Yeah.
Because he really is... for an actor that young in his career, too, to give that, like, off... Nick Cage did it young in his career, too. Nick Cage, I've got it coming up later, too. But it's interesting that he had that much freedom.
Yeah.
And... he kind of saves the movie. That is not a good movie. It makes no sense either. But he's really fun to watch.
He is a lot of fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
I got to bring up, I try any chance I can to bring up Tom Atkins. Night of the Creeps. He's a maniac in that movie, and he's a lot of fun. Like, every time he's on screen, he's devouring the rest of the cast verbally. It's great. So he's a lot of fun in that one. And then another one I wanted to bring up was, in a good way, Robert Englund.
Yeah.
As Freddy Krueger.
Yes.
I mean, like, but I hate to, when I say scenery chewing, like, he's, that's the way the character should be. You know what I mean? That's the way the Freddy Krueger character should be. He should come in and own the room.
And that's another one. And those later movies get pretty rough.
Yeah, he gets a little, like,
but.
Slapstick.
He does get a little slapstick, but he is at least fun to watch.
Yes. You can't take your eyes off of
no.
him. No. So that's another one. He's also pretty great in scenery chewing in The Mangler.
Is he?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, England, he's a bit of a ham.
He is.
Well, the thing with Freddy, though, too, is he's a bit of a jokester in the first one. It's just his jokes are a little bit meaner.
Yeah.
They're a little darker, if I recall correctly.
Well, and he's killing people in ways that are a little less goofy.
He's not as slapsticky as he becomes later on, so...
But yeah, England is a classic
mm-hmm.
scenery chewer for sure.
Yeah. I have Al Pacino. Devil's Advocate counts, right?
As oh, my God. Devil's Advocate.
He has a string of 90s and I think early 2000s run. Any Given Sunday is not a horror movie, but it's kind of around the same time. where it's just the energy is impressive. The Devil's Advocate's pretty fun.
It is pretty fun.
I think it's pretty fun. And he's good in it. Keanu's in it.
Pacino's run around that time, even his the stuff that he put out that was like really good, like Heat.
Yes.
Is one of my favorite movies of all time. And even in Heat, there's moments where you're like, whoa, Al, bring it back. Yeah. He's got that, what's that line he's got in Heat? Oh, she's got a great ass.
Yeah. Oh, that's from Heat. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're like, where did this come from? It's pretty funny.
Right.
Yeah.
It would become a parody at times.
Yep.
But that doesn't mean it's not fun to watch.
It's a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun to watch. What else you got?
Just a couple more. Nick Cage and Wicker Man. We have to talk about this.
Oh, God.
There's an interview with Nick Cage, I think, like, after Wicker Man came out, where someone flat out asked him, like, what were you doing in that movie? Like, what was going on in that movie? And he just kind of looks at the interviewer, and he goes, listen, I know exactly what kind of performance that was. Like, that's, I was told to kind of go nuts, and I did.
The
Wicker
God.
Man is complete insanity. The problem with The Wicker Man is that the first hour is not really that fun to watch. It's kind of boring.
It is.
And you could probably watch it through YouTube clips of the last half hour or so, 40 minutes. But I almost recommend watching the whole thing because it's kind of this weird hypnotic feeling to where, like, the first hour is kind of dull and boring.
Yeah, and when he's searching for the girl, you're like, okay.
You're like, kind of keep it moving. And then all of a sudden it explodes. And it doesn't really even build to insanity. It just happens
all of a sudden. It's nuts.
Because if I recall Nick Cage in the first hour or so, it's a bit of a subdued performance.
It totally is.
But then it's totally not.
Then he puts on a bear costume.
He puts on a bear costume.
He's kicking Lily Sobieski through a wall.
He kicks. Does he kick Ellen Burstyn?
I think so.
He kicks an older woman at some point. Not the best. And then one more. One more I wanted to mention because we just talked about it.
Sure.
But I think it's kind of an iconic performance is Mitch Pileggi.
In Shocker. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought of that one, too. That was one of the ones on my list, yeah.
Yeah, Wes could give some actor some free reign sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because even Matthew Lillard at the end
of
Scream.
That was my next one to bring up. Yep. Matthew Lillard at the end of Scream is awesome.
Yes.
But he is chewing it. Actually, him and Skeet Ulrich are battling over... They're like two lovers with a pasta noodle in the center, like Lady and the Tramp. And they're just fighting over it.
When they're stabbing each other at the end. It's them using...
It's insane.
Standing for their acting, yeah.
It's so fun. All right, awesome. So, I think it's time to jump into our last movie of the evening here. Tales from the Hood. Tales from the Hood is about a funeral director who tells four strange tales of horror. With an African-American focus, to three drug dealers he traps in his place of business. Yeah, that's about
that
it.
Sums it up, yeah.
It's an anthology horror film in the vein of, like Creepshow and Tales from the Dark Side and other horror anthologies. This one's got four stories in it. Five if you count the bookends. And I think, obviously, that the big thing to take from that synopsis is that these stories have an African-American focus.
Yep.
Tim, Tales from the Hood. How long has it been since you've seen it?
Probably about 5 or 6 years, I would say.
So it's been a while.
Yeah.
Not a fresh memory of it, but...
No.
Okay. Same for me. It's been a little longer than that, probably 10 years. But what did you think this time around? How did you feel about it?
I remember I watched this as a kid, too.
Okay.
Because it would be on HBO late at night. This is kind of a good episode for me because I think I watched all of these movies late at night on HBO because
that's
what they would be on.
That's awesome.
But I would, and it's funny, I would really only watch certain segments of it.
Okay.
Probably.
You pick and choose.
Yeah. And you know, I probably watched the middle two segments.
Okay.
The most of that time because they had David Alan Grier and Corbin Burnson was in Major League and I like Major League. Yeah. So I would watch it then, but I honestly kind of forgotten about segments 1 and 4. And I'm glad I did because they took me by surprise. I think this is a pretty damn great horror anthology.
It's up there with the best.
I think it's as good as it gets. I don't think each story is perfect, but I think that kind of works in its favor in some ways. I think that wraparound is perfect, though.
Mm-hmm.
I think the story throughout, and I think that's kind of what kind of makes it work, that wraparound, those bookends, the shock ending at the end, the performance by Clarence Williams III. He holds this whole thing together, honestly.
He's awesome.
He's awesome.
Yeah.
Yep. He's funny. He's unhinged. He's kind of scary throughout the whole
thing. He's chewing some scenery, too.
He's very much so.
And sweating a lot.
Well, that's explained later.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think he's phenomenal.
Yeah.
But no, I think this, if it's not the best horror anthology of all time, I think Creepshow would be.
Sure. Yeah, I think, I'm trying to think of another one that I would put up there with this.
As far as consistency, though, I think it's this and Creepshow.
Yeah.
I
think it is. Yeah.
There's some older ones.
Like,
I would
Twilight Zone, the movie, is good,
uh-huh.
but I don't think it's as good all around as these two.
Tales from the Dark Side isn't, right?
Yeah, it's good, but it's not as good as Tales from the Hood.
Yeah. There are a couple older ones, I guess, that I would like to maybe rewatch before I make the statement. But as far as ones that I've seen and are fresh in my memory, this is up there at the top because it's consistent. The wraparound works. It's funny. It's relevant, it's scary, it's gory. And the reason I said I'm happy I forgot about the first and the fourth one is they took me by surprise. And the fourth one kind of took me by surprise in a way that I wasn't expecting. I forgot why I didn't watch it as a kid, and it's because it freaked me out. Mm. There are parts where the director and the makers of the movie use like actual scenes of death and destruction and gore. And it like messed with me, I think, when I saw it as a kid. And it still kind of, it bothers me. I think this is a movie that deals with a lot of darker subject matter, police brutality, child abuse, institutional racism, black-on-black crime, which were all relevant in the 90s. And
well, I mean, think about it. We're only a few years removed from Rodney King.
Yes.
We're right in the midst of OJ.
Mm-hmm.
We're only a few years removed from the LA riots.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot going on.
Yes.
Especially on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And what I find amazing about that is that you can take kind of the vibe and the feelings of African-American culture at the time.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot going on. And you can take that and creatively you can work that into what is essentially a fun horror comedy that but still retain that meaning and that purpose.
Yes.
Without beating people over the head with it. Because even the first segment, which is probably the most on the nose in terms of what it's trying to say. It's a black man being beaten by white cops.
Yeah.
Even that, though, does it gracefully.
Yeah.
It could have easily become like, okay, come on now. Like, we get it. But it totally, I think it does it gracefully. And I think it makes it more interesting by having the young cop who...
Oh, it plays, yeah, that's right. It plays like Strange Brew in the background to the song.
Yeah.
It plays in the background.
Yep.
Yeah, it's really haunting. And yeah.
It is. Mm-hmm. And I think to the decision to make the young cop, the rookie, who doesn't participate in the beating but is guilty by not taking action, to make him a black man as well makes it more interesting.
It honestly, when I think back at it, it does that throughout the movie. It's an angry movie.
Yeah.
And it's angry at everybody.
Yeah.
And that's why I kind of like it.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't let anybody off the hook.
No.
That's why those second, I think my favorite two segments are the second and the third. And I think it's probably my favorite is probably the third one. I just think
my favorite's the third one too.
It deals with a lot of the directors talk about it. It deals with a lot of, yeah, dark and kind of mean subject matter, but it's kind of funny in its own way.
It's a lot of fun.
And a lot of it has to do with the actors are really hamming it up at times. And the directors even talk about, like, people were rolling on the floor. like at certain parts of the movie, and they're like, we didn't necessarily expect that, but their performances are so good in it that it kind of did. But it also, you're right, it adds to the entertainment value of the movie, and it also alleviates a lot of, because if it didn't have any humor in it at all, it would just be, this movie would be pretty bleak.
It'd be a bummer.
It really would.
Yeah, it would.
And those puppets are really funny.
They're awesome. They're evil little dudes, but they're kind of like fun.
They make really fun noises.
Yeah, like their little feet tapping around. Like, because Corbin Burnson will be looking around for them, and you'll hear just like a... It's so cool. And you know what? What I love about it, too, is on kind of a more meta level, little evil dolls are kind of have a weird association with anthology horror because of Trilogy of Terror. And there's actually a couple other anthology movies that have featured like a little creature, you know what I mean? Like chasing somebody around they're all alone in a house and they're being followed around by something tiny and hard to find. Yeah. So that's a common thing in these movies. It's a recurring thing. So to do that, to take that and find a way to spin it and make it work within the idea that this is an African American focused horror anthology, it's awesome. It's really, it's kind of genius. And it works as comedic horror, and it works as legitimately kind of spooky. And Corbin Burnson is
he is nuts. And there, once again, go out and buy the Scream Factory Blu-ray if you are interested in owning this movie at all, because it's got a really good documentary on it. The interview with the makers, one I think is the director, was actually he was like a playwright, and he wrote like horror plays that he would play at like African-American clubs around, I believe, Los Angeles at the time, which is really cool to me. But Corbin Burnson would show up on set every day, and like he'd immediately warn everybody. He's like, listen, I'm going to a place that's kind of freaks me out, and like I apologize for everything I'm going to say.
Yeah.
So he would do that every day, and they kind of let him have some freedom with what he said too.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. I also wanted to touch on a couple things, because hip-hop and horror there's a lot of intertwining between the two.
Sure.
And around this time, I remember there being a lot of it as well. I remember two music videos in particular around this time. There was Natural Born Killers, which was Dr. Dre and Ice Cube.
Mm-hmm.
And do you remember that song? It's the New Jack entrance music.
I do.
ECW.
Do you
remember the music video?
Not really.
It's like them in this, like post-apocalyptic wasteland.
Oh my god.
And like the camera would like swing around him. I would watch this video late at night. It's what, like, when I think of the scariest things to me as a kid, this video pops in my head, because like their face would just turn into a skull at some point as the camera whipped
around.
That's
awesome.
It would freak me out. And then Murder Was the Case by Snoop Dogg.
Yeah.
Was another kind of, it was like a horror short film. Mm-hmm. Both of those were kind of like horror short films, and there was kind of like a sub-genre of hip hop around the time called horrorcore.
Oh, wow.
Which I'm like trying to write something on and like listening to it right now. And it's basically, it's kind of cheesy and corny, but it doesn't always work. It's a genre of music that works better in one-shot songs than it does for a whole album because they go too long too. But it's basically like, it's horrorcore. It's basically like a horror movie put to an album. It's like rappers rapping about death and dying and all sorts of stuff. It's basically rapping about stuff you see in horror movies.
Wow.
ICP is kind of an example of this.
Okay.
They would be an example. The one with the RZA, I think it's Gravediggers. The RZA was like the lead on it.
Okay.
But, this is a good representation too of that aesthetic in hip hop around the time too. It is kind of neat. And one more thing, music-wise, I want to touch on. Christopher Young does the score for this.
He's so good.
And it's so good.
Yeah, it's so good. It doesn't kick up super often, but when it does, you're like, whoa,
yes.
Oh my god.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you can kind of tell it's a Christopher Young score.
Yep.
And I mean that as a compliment. You're
yes.
instantly like, oh my god, Christopher Young, crushing it again. Yeah, the guy's so good. This, if you're going to watch one of the three out of the movies we've talked about today, I'd say Tales from the Hood.
Me too.
But you should watch Demon Knight too.
I agree.
Yeah.
Tales from the Hood and Demon Knight are very good.
They're kind of a fun double feature too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Especially because they have the anthology tie-in stuff too.
I dig it.
We didn't even touch on the Crypt Keeper. He's pretty funny.
He's so cool. I used to be terrified of the Crypt Keeper as a kid. I don't know if I've told the story, but until my dad told me that he's also the voice of Buster Bunny on Looney Tune Adventures.
Oh, really?
On Tiny Toon Adventures. And I was like, oh, okay. I wasn't scared anymore. It was like when he told me that Tim Curry was, it, he showed, yeah, yeah, he showed me Rocky Horror Picture Show and said, see, look at him. He looks ridiculous. You know, like, he's Frankenfurter. He's ridiculous. And I was like, oh, I'm not scared of the clown anymore.
Right.
So, thanks for that, Dad. All right, cool. Yeah, no, definitely check out Tales from the Hood. Species, you know, at your own risk.
And, it's on Cinemax a lot.
It is, sure is. Action Max, tune on in. It'll be on at some point. And definitely check out Demon Knight. Let's see. Facebook.com/horror movie yearbook. Mm-hmm. You can leave us feedback there. We're a little more active on Twitter than on Facebook. We're at HM Yearbook, so please tweet at us, follow us, you know, all that good stuff. Maybe we'll follow you back.
Yep.
I'd like to hear what you have to say. We have the website, of course, horrormovieyearbook.com, where you can find the articles we talked about earlier. Yes. Like I said, we got a new piece on Spider Baby and some DLC ideas for the new Friday the 13th game.
Yep, check that out.
Absolutely.
Oh, and check out our Friday the 13th episode of
the Midwest Game Nerds podcast.
With John Morrell.
You can find them on iTunes as well. We do make a guest appearance on that. It was a lot of fun. Thanks to those guys again. Speaking of iTunes, please jump on, rate, review, preferably a 5-star if you could. It really helps us gain visibility with new listeners. Yeah, that's about it. You can email us as well at horrormovieyearbook@gmail.com. So we look forward to hearing from you. Tim, I'm kind of putting you on the spot here.
Okay.
Do you know what you're picking for our next episode?
Okay. What are we doing next episode? Let's talk this out.
Let's hash this thing out.
Are we going with a special episode?
Yeah, you know what we are. I'm sorry.
I
kind of forgot about that.
Yeah, I think we're about due for a special episode.
You know, it's funny because earlier today, I'm the one who said, hey, let's do... I must be tired today.
It's the heat, man.
I'm not on my A game, man. I must be totally out of it from this heat. Yeah, so we are doing a special episode for our next episode. We will be bringing back a little ditty we call Fight the Franchise.
Mm-hmm.
And Tim and I, for those that don't know, we're on a show together for, what, 3 years, 4 years?
I think 4 years.
Yep, called the Midwest Film Nerds. You can find that on iTunes as well. We did a special called Fight the Franchise where what we would do is we'd basically marathon the hell out of a horror franchise. And
this
then,
started because I just want to put this out there real quick and interrupt rudely.
You're fine.
But I have to make sure people know this started because you, like a maniac, watched all of the Hellraiser movies out of nowhere one time.
I did. Yeah, I just decided I'm going to watch all the Hellraiser movies. I regretted it. I still do. That's time I will never get back. But what we started doing was watching these series of these horror franchises, and then we'd sit down and record one episode where we just totally blasted through the entire franchise, like speed dating, kind of.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to be doing that again. We're bringing it back, only this time on Horror Movie Yearbook. So it will be you and I, and then my wife Nikki will be joining us, as she did on a couple of the previous ones.
Yeah, we got a lady voice.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to getting a female voice on the show, and I hope you guys will enjoy that too. Although to be fair, she can be a lot more
cruder,
brutal than we.
Yeah,
a lot more crude than we are.
She's really offensive.
Just throwing that out there.
I've cried on past episodes.
Yeah, she's made Tim cry. But we'll be talking about the Phantasm series.
Yes.
So really excited about that. Very psyched to revisit some of the Phantasm movies. I have not seen Ravager yet because I'm a bad fan, and I don't know why else. But yeah, I'm psyched. And you've seen all these movies.
Mm-hmm.
Nikki has seen none of them.
Oh, really? Perfect.
Maybe the first.
Perfect.
So that's going to be a lot
of
fun.
And they just came out with the new Blu-ray set.
Yes.
I think it's is it Wellgo USA?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really good Blu-ray set.
So, yeah, that'll be a lot of fun. And then after that, we'll be back to your regularly scheduled program. We should have an idea what year we'll be covering by the end of the Phantasm Fight the Franchise episode. We'll let you know.
Yep.
So, thanks again, guys, for listening. Thanks for bearing with my heat stroke induced brain here.
Wasn't that bad.
And
I forget what I'm saying.
And thanks for listening again, and we will see you next time.
Bye bye, man.